My guest this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here. Thanks for having me, Greg.
Well, certainly a lot of political development since we last spoke. The big Romney win in Florida. He wins again after a protracted vote count, but handily in Nevada. But then all of a sudden, Tuesday night, John, a major change. Rick Santorum doing well in the so-called beauty contest primary in Missouri, much better than expected in Minnesota by winning that caucus, and then really shocking a lot of people by defeating Mitt Romney in Colorado, where Romney had done exceedingly well in 2008. How significant is this run by Rick Santorum, even if it doesn't really mean any new delegates officially yet?
Well, it certainly adds momentum to the Santorum effort, and I spoke to one of his campaign operatives only today who said he brought in $3 million in the last week, and they expect a lot more than that. So he'll be able to keep going. But here's the problem for any candidate. He's got to win something eventually. He's got to have his South Carolina moment and have that turn into delegates, not just a beauty contest, not just a delegate selection process, but real hard delegates. He can say that he has won now four contests compared to three for Romney. That's fine as far as it goes, but remember, 1,100 and some delegates have to be chosen, and that's where Rick Santorum has to demonstrate he's a contender.
So as you point out, he actually has won more states than he has delegates currently allotted to him. He's only got three because Iowa is as similar as these other states that we saw yesterday. Their delegates are selected at the state convention. Does this change in any way the balance of power in the effort to be the non-Mitt Romney candidate? How much does this help Rick Santorum make the case that he's the better choice, not Newt Gingrich, to be that conservative alternative?
I don't think it is mean-spirited or even an exaggeration to say that there is some latent doubtfulness about Mitt Romney as the candidate. We saw it in 1976 among the Democrats when Jimmy Carter appeared headed toward the nomination, and suddenly Senator Frank Church of Idaho began to win primaries. And then the young Governor Jerry Brown emerged as a superstar and won. But in the end, Carter had the delegates. In 1968, many people had their doubts about Richard Nixon running after losing his last two races. And there was a movement for Governor Nelson Rockefeller at the end and for the newly minted Governor Ronald Reagan of California at the National Party Convention. But once again, Nixon had the delegates. I do believe with Romney, you will see these doubts expressed with another Santorum win, perhaps, maybe a Gingrich win, perhaps. But when it comes down to it, he looks awfully hard to beat.
John, you write and have written for years for the National Conservative Weekly. Do you think the surprising Santorum performance will push Romney further to the right, where conservatives might be a little more comfortable with him?
Well, I would have said that a little while ago if he began losing steadily. But I had this discussion earlier with a journalist from France as well as an historian, and my conclusion on it, Greg, is what I told them, that the Republican Party in general is a right-of-center party. It's cool to be conservative if you're a Republican. And I do believe that Mitt Romney will answer questions in a conservative way and plans to govern that way. To what degree and the phrases used, it really is not that important because I think he spelled out his agenda already, and I see no reason for him to change anything.
John, let's talk about another issue that's been in the headlines a lot this week, and Rick Santorum mentioned it a lot Tuesday night in his victory speech, and that's this major controversy the Obama administration has sparked through the Department of Health and Human Services by announcing that all health care plans need to offer contraception. That, of course, is outraging the Catholic Church, Catholic Charities, Catholic hospitals, and many other institutions who have a problem with contraception based on church teachings or other reasons. The White House has promised that this is not going to change. Then David Axelrod said there might be a little bit of a nuance here. What's the political impact of all this, and do you think there will be any actual change in the policy?
Well, they have 1 year, and based on what Press Secretary Jay Carney told us on Monday, during that year's period, it might be the White House feels a way for the church hierarchy, Catholics as well as many Protestant churches, to adapt to this policy. But if one reads the letter that the Catholic Conference of Bishops put out, notably that signed in the Archdiocese of Washington by Donald Cardinal Wuerl, the church is not budging and already calling for legislation that abrogates the order by HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, herself a Roman Catholic. My guess is that the administration will be eyeball to eyeball with the church hierarchy and eventually will back down on this completely. Remember, Barack Obama got 54% of the Catholic vote in 2008. And I don't think he wants to make an enemy out of past supporters.
If he doesn't budge, do you think this could affect his performance among Catholic voters a great deal?
I have no doubt about it. When a letter like that, that calls this an assault on the First Amendment, comes out under the signatures of the princes of the church and is read at Mass throughout the United States, that is a clear sign that the largest group of religious-affiliated people is upset, or certainly their leadership is, and they're not going to be quiet about it. I might add, let's add the controversy about the chaplain in charge in the U.S. military not being allowed to read that letter and then being allowed to have the letter read through, albeit a limited version with a key sentence taking out. That's not sitting well with Catholics right now or people of all faiths.
That's definitely a major issue at the moment. John, just a couple minutes left here real quick to go overseas. The Arab Spring not seeming so fragrant to a lot of folks anymore. Egypt, of course, has a lot of chaos. They just had a major stampede, nearly two dozen Americans being indefinitely detained. Syria, of course, engulfed in flames, the U.S. diplomatic corps pulling out of there. And if that weren't enough, we've got more saber-rattling from the Iranians toward the Israelis, while the Israelis are once again talking about military strikes against the Iranian nuclear program. Your thoughts on how the administration is handling this?
Well, I have to say the administration is cautious and appearing in charge on the foreign policy front. In Syria, they are finally coming around to saying that President Assad has to go at this point, and they will be better off in Syria when he is out of Damascus. This is what they've said about other autocrats who are on their last legs, and I can remember very vividly being at some of those round-the-clock sessions at the White House when watching Hosni Mubarak's last days being played out right at the podium in the White House. This is what it's like right now. That's going to be up to Syria. In Iran, certainly the president signaled that perhaps Israel's already made its decision. Leon Panetta said as much. Jay Carney did not say that exactly on Monday, so there's a bit of a disconnect there. I personally do believe Israel is ready to strike, as they did against Iraq under Saddam Hussein in 1982. That's just a personal observation. My own guess is that what is happening right now is just simply a sign that sometimes we just don't know what to expect when a government is gone and the unknown takes over. It's very hard for me to recall the names of the generals who are in charge in Egypt right now or to know what will follow them if and when a civilian government comes to power. The Syrian opposition we read bits and pieces about. Almost all of them are exiles, just as Iraq's Chalabi was. And what their feel is for what's going on in that country, much less who would be in charge, is all a mystery. And certainly in Iran, everyone I've ever met has been in exile for many years. So, again, I'd have to say, as they say at the close of the movie serials, to be continued next week.
And also between now and next week, you'll be at the CPAC conference here in Washington.
Indeed, I will.
Do you have your do you have your protective gear ready to confront the Occupy protesters who plan to disrupt this thing?
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. And as a student of history, I'm going to tell them all about how my father used to watch in the newsreels films of the bonus marchers in Washington and would boo General MacArthur. Of course, he changed his opinion when he served in the Pacific in World War II 10 years later. and see if we can have a good historical discussion. I enjoy engaging people who are light years removed from me. Let's see what they have to say.
Well, good luck with that discussion. John, have a great time there. We'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to CPAC, my panel, the Occupy CPAC protesters, and hopefully some good interviews for Human Events. I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi is political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.